This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, we help you understand some of the most important news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, May 15th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Today is the day. Allegheny County and 12 other southwestern Pennsylvania counties are now in the yellow phase of Governor Tom Wolf's reopening plan. That means daycares are allowed to open, as are many retail establishments and churches. Gatherings of less than 25 people are permitted, but individuals are still expected to socially distance and wear masks. Restaurants are closed to dine-in customers, and gyms, movie theaters, and casinos are all still shuttered. We're cautiously dipping our toes into the water. We know that cannonballing into the deep end would be very, very bad. But even that toe dipping could result in a new spike in cases of COVID-19. Here's Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald this week.
Certainly we're nervous. And as we've succeeded in keeping those numbers low, and at this point, we've got to be responsible. We've got to make sure that we continue to practice all the mitigating strategies that have gotten us to this point, that has put us in a position to be able to have so many of our folks go back to work and make a living.
In its plan for reopening Pennsylvania, the Wolf administration acknowledges that sufficient testing and case investigation must be in place. In the latter category, we're actually doing pretty well, according to Allegheny County Health Department Director Dr. Deborah Bogan.
We have been able to reach most of the people we try to, which has been fantastic. And we have designed a flexible and responsive plan to sort of increase the numbers of contact tracers as the cases increase.
But in terms of testing, the situation is less clear. The Wolf administration recommends testing 2% of the population each month. In Allegheny County, that's about 24,000 people, roughly equivalent to the total number of tests that have been run since March. The federal government wants states to set up what it calls sentinel surveillance testing sites focused on at-risk populations. Sites like these have been set up in hard-hit New York City and in the eastern part of Pennsylvania, but not in Allegheny County. And then there are the recommendations of public health researchers from places like Harvard and Johns Hopkins, who advocate for widespread surveillance level testing to really get a handle on how many infections are present in the community. State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine says that's not possible yet.
What would be best to be able to do that would to have a rapid, simple point of care test that perhaps healthcare providers could rapidly do in 15 or 20 minutes, maybe even a home test that would have very good accuracy. That's not available yet, but I know that there are laboratories and companies working on that. That would aid that type of population-based screening greatly.
When Levine announced this week that all residents and staff at Pennsylvania nursing homes would be routinely tested for coronavirus, she acknowledged that many carriers of the virus don't show symptoms.
And so by testing them when they start to develop symptoms, we're missing people.
That same logic holds for the broader population. County Health Director Bogan is hopeful that surveillance level testing will be coming eventually. But in the meantime, she says the county is prepared to reopen.
We are tracking data at the health department very closely. We look at emergency department visits. We look at hospitalizations. We look at bed availability. We look at our cases. We look for clustering in those cases. And that data will help drive our decision making.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Want more local news but don't have the time or, frankly, the desire to comb through all the headlines? Let us do it for you. Sign up for our daily newsletter, Inbox Edition, and get the stories you need to start your day delivered right to your inbox. Sign up at wesa.fm/inboxedition.
Hello?
Hi, Ed. It's Liz.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
I know you have two little ones at home. How are you guys hanging?
We're doing pretty good. I have set up a space in my closet right now to record this. They're good. I think my 6-year-old, he's in kindergarten class right now on Zoom. My 3-year-old, I think, is playing with cars downstairs.
Ed Mahan, reporter for PA Post, covering the state capitol.
Now, most southwestern Pennsylvania counties are now in the yellow phase of the governor's reopening plan, all except Beaver County. But officials there have actually told businesses, hey, just act like we're yellow. Go ahead and open. What's the argument that they're making?
The first argument is saying that it's only fair that they be moved to yellow, that if all the neighboring counties are going to be in yellow, that people are going to leave Beaver County to go to those businesses. And so there's going to be movement anyway. The practical way that they're doing it is, I talked to Commissioner Dan Camp. He says they didn't pass a resolution. They didn't pass an order to do this. Basically, they held a news conference, and they're trying to highlight the fact that the district attorney there says he won't prosecute businesses that violate the governor's shutdown orders. And so Dan Camp is encouraging people to operate as if they're in the yellow phase. He's asking them not to go beyond that. He's saying for bars and restaurants, they shouldn't allow people to dine inside, and barbers and hairdressers shouldn't open up for customers either. He's saying, you know, operate for yellow, which means many retail businesses could reopen, and then, you know, other types of offices as well.
One of the reasons that they're saying this is because the lion's share of the COVID-19 cases in Beaver County are at a single nursing home. Are there other counties, though, in Pennsylvania that are making similar declarations in terms of just encouraging businesses to open?
Yeah, and we saw a lot of it in South Central PA this past weekend. You know, the governor announced that Southwestern PA would be moving to yellow. South Central PA sort of, you know, started revolting over that. A lot of district attorneys in those areas, including York, Lebanon, Lancaster, they said they wouldn't prosecute businesses that violate stay-at-home orders. In Lancaster, specifically, the commissioners announced a plan that they would be moving ahead, moving to yellow on their own, with sort of a detailed, you know, contact tracing plan, testing plan, and sort of a plan to get protective personal equipment out to businesses. And then on Monday, the governor, you know, he sort of tried to shut that down and warned of all the consequences they could face. And so you saw some counties sort of back off it a little bit. Dauphin backed off their plans. Schuylkill County backed off as well. But right now, Lebanon and Lancaster are, you know, still encouraging businesses to operate as if they're in that yellow phase starting Friday.
Do they have a legal right to do this, to override the governor's order?
County commissioners don't have a lot of authority over businesses in general. And so really, when the county commissioners say, we're moving to yellow, they're just saying it. It reminds me of The Office, a long time episode of The Office, where like Michael Scott said, I declare bankruptcy, but didn't do anything. Like, that's not how declaring bankruptcy works. And so for them, they're just saying, we're moving to yellow, but it's not a legal position they're taking. They're just encouraging businesses to operate as if they are in yellow. And they're relying on the district attorneys not to prosecute those businesses for doing so. And then they're in turn relying on the Wolf administration to not crack down too hard on them for encouraging businesses to operate as if they are in yellow.
You mentioned that on Monday, Wolf made some pretty strong remarks about what consequences there might be for counties or for businesses that just decide to reopen in defiance of his order. What did he say?
He said, you know, big picture wise, they could lose access to certain federal money. They could lose access to state money. And then for the individual businesses, they could lose, you know, their licenses. He says they could have issues with insurance, and he says they could have issues with occupancy permits as well. You know, so for a bar or restaurant, if they were to open, you know, they could lose their state liquor license, and that's a huge deal. For a barbershop, if it decides to open, they could lose, you know, they're regulated by the state directly, so that would be a big problem for them if they had a crackdown like that. In Berks County in particular, they were talking about, you know, possibly creating their own reopening plan. And at a news conference the other day, you know, the Republican County Commissioner there said that the insurance issue is just too big of a risk for him to encourage businesses to reopen. So they really went back to just asking politely for the governor to allow Berks County to move into the yellow phase.
Ed, thanks so much for your reporting this week.
Thank you very much, Liz. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Sarah, it's so nice to see your face.
It's so nice to see you, too. It's good to be back in the office for a little bit.
For the benefit of the listeners, Sarah Schneider is in the station in person because she's filling in for our All Things Considered host, Christopher Ayers. So we are in a conference room sitting at opposite ends of a very long conference table, well over 6 feet apart, both grinning like children, because it's so nice to see someone that you haven't seen in such a long time. How does it feel to be working out of the home today?
It's really nice. It feels normal to be back in an office, which is odd. Like, I think we take it for granted how comforting routine is. My name is Sarah Schneider. I cover education for WESA.
So I'll be honest, during this time, I have been so incredibly grateful to not be dependent on childcare. My husband was already a stay-at-home dad, as you know, but for a lot of other families, daycare closures have been incredibly disruptive. So in a way, it makes a lot of sense that daycares are opening in this initial yellow phase. But then again, caring for small children involves so much touch. Caregivers have to be close to these kids. So how are daycares planning to reopen safely? It sounds like a logistical nightmare.
Right. So opening safely will not look the same at each location because procedures are being left up largely to providers. The Department of Human Services wants both in-home and care centers to follow Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines. It's a very comprehensive set of guidance. You know, they want fewer students in a class. It calls for children older than two to wear masks at all times.
Okay, I have two two-year-olds at home. That sounds very unrealistic.
Yeah, the Department of Human Services says when feasible. We're not really sure what that means. It's going to be really hard to keep masks on kids, so it might not happen, but that's the guidance, right? The thing is, a lot of this, it's not being enforced by the state. They're just asking them to do this, to follow this, to keep your kids safe and to keep your staff safe. But the Department of Human Services doesn't have the authority to enforce these procedures.
There are a number of daycares that have been open this whole time because they got waivers to serve essential workers. So how have they been managing?
I spoke to a provider in Pittsburgh that opened in late March for these essential workers. The hardest part, she said, for her staff was really unlearning a lot of what they've been taught as care providers. You know, it's hard to comfort children when you're not supposed to touch them, or when, you know, kids all have their own set of toys right now and you have to clean them after every use. And it's
so they're like actually discouraging sharing.
Yes, exactly. And I think they're in crisis mode right now. It's just trying to care for these kids in a safe environment. We're not really sure what the quality of learning is going to look like just because that's kind of been put on the back burner. They're just trying to sanitize and, you know, keep the space clean. And this provider that I spoke to, you know, bought shoes for all of the kids so that they have a different pair of shoes to wear in the building, and they keep theirs outside, and they wear scrubs, and they're, you know, wearing masks and gloves and cleaning constantly. She said, you know, she's never cleaned this many Legos in her life, but I think that's going to be the new normal for these centers.
So one of the recommendations that daycare centers are grappling with is smaller classroom sizes. So if they are limiting the number of kids in classrooms, it sounds like there's just going to be less overall capacity in these daycares. So really, not every kid is going to be able to go back, right?
So some centers I spoke to said they might take children in shifts. So you'll have a group come in the morning and then a group in the afternoon to eliminate that cross-contamination. Others may choose to take all their kids back at once, but really it's hard to know if every kid will be able to go back, because the providers I spoke to said they're waiting on parents. You know, parents might not feel comfortable putting their kids back in a group setting. So there might be openings because those parents who maybe have found other childcare, or they found a way to work from home with their kids there, it might work itself out. What we do know is before this pandemic, there was a shortage of high quality spaces in the city. These centers operate on very slim margins, and so being closed for 2 months might mean that some of them are permanently closed, and that's going to be a real problem. And the advocates that I spoke to are very concerned about that. They think it's going to take a long time to recover from this financially. And, you know, the state received $100 million for childcare from the CARES Act, the federal CARES Act, but they won't say yet how or when they're going to distribute that money.
Sarah, thanks so much for sharing what you know on the show today.
Thanks, Liz.
Hello, this is Brett.
Hi, Brett. It's Liz.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
So are you working from home or are you working from the station?
Oh, I'm working from home. Honestly, I haven't been at the station. I've been at the station probably two times in the past month. I was kind of one of the first to start working from home. You know, I could just see as a health reporter that it was sort of so problematic having everybody in the audio production rooms and everything like that. So I've been basically working from home, and, you know, it's going pretty well. I'm Brett Schultes, health reporter at WITF in Harrisburg.
In so many ways, this pandemic has forced us to grapple with the often oppositional relationship between the economy and health. In a broad sense, as the state starts to reopen, officials are weighing the risks of the economic shutdown versus the risk of increased disease transmission. But as you reported this week, there are people out there who have to weigh these risks on a really personal level because they're more vulnerable to severe effects of COVID-19. Tell us about one of the people that you talked to.
One of the first people I talked with was Joyce Veneta, who's a registered nurse. She's been a registered nurse for 40 years, and she's worked everywhere from emergency rooms to intensive care units through to a nursing home, which is where she works now. And Joyce has an autoimmune disorder, and that means that she gets sick really easily. And when she gets sick, she tends to get sick worse than maybe a lot of other people would, and can be really tough for her to shake.
So you said she works in a nursing home right now, and we know nursing homes and other assisted living facilities have been some of the hardest hit. So has Joyce been going to work?
Joyce's situation is a little bit different because as a nurse, Joyce did not lose her job. She was considered an essential employee. But, you know, Joyce was already sick because of her autoimmune disorder, just as it happened. She did not have COVID-19. She had a respiratory infection. And so as this whole thing was going on, Joyce was home. And the whole time she was thinking, eventually I'm going to run out of unpaid federal leave and I'm going to have to go back to work. And if I don't go back to work, this might be the end of my career. For someone like Joyce, this problem isn't going to go away anytime within the next year. You know, the doctor who I talked to in my story, Dr. Fouad Ismail, who's an immunologist, he points out that, you know, once we have a vaccine for this and once we have antivirals for this, then doctors like him do have more that they can do to help people. So there is, you know, some hope, but that hope is a year or a year and a half away.
What options do these people have? Like, if you get called back to work, but you are immunocompromised, can you just tell your employer no? Can you continue to collect unemployment?
Well, the short answer to this is no from the state. And the longer answer would be maybe on a case-by-case basis. The state labor and industry secretary, Jerry Oleksiak, said point blank to reporters in a meeting that fear of getting COVID-19 is not a valid reason for somebody to stay on unemployment compensation if they've been called back to work. He said, if you've been called back, you have to go. And they did kind of walk that back a little bit. The unemployment compensation director, Susan Dickinson, said that if you had certain conditions, if you were immunocompromised, or if someone in your family had certain conditions, then the state might consider allowing you to stay on unemployment compensation on a case-by-case basis. As a health reporter, I'm really focused just on people's health and how that interacts with everything else. That's kind of the lens I look at this all through. But there's this other thing going on, and a lot of GOP lawmakers are really have really taken this issue up as well right now, where somebody who's on unemployment compensation who may have been working a $10 an hour job or $15 an hour job, now they're unemployed, so they're getting unemployment through the state. They were laid off because of the coronavirus. They're getting unemployment through the state, and then they're also getting this $600 a week in federal stimulus money that was part of the special CARES package, the coronavirus response package. So for people like that, they're actually making more money on unemployment right now than they were making at their jobs. For state lawmakers who are focused more on the business community and small businesses that are just getting killed right now, they're just completely, some of them are at risk of shutting down. They're trying to get people to go back to work and to normalize the situation to prevent those companies from going out of business.
Not a lot of winners in this situation. Brett, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks for talking.
It's time for another break. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Katie Blackley, producer of Pittsburgh Explainer. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You can help other people find us by subscribing and following Pittsburgh Explainer on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Now back to the program.
A I don't know about you, but since I've been spending more time at home, I've become somewhat disenchanted with a lot of the stuff my family has accumulated over the years. I've got a nice size pile of donations from my local Goodwill store, which is scheduled to reopen on Monday. Sadly, I also have some things that are too far gone to donate, which means they'll go out in the trash next week when bulk pickup resumes in Pittsburgh. Mayor Bill Peduto has requested that people not put all their large trash out at once. I'll be honest, I really can't wait to hit up the thrift stores and fill my house back up with someone else's junk. Heck, there might even be some good stuff on the curb. That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, WESA.FM, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.